Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Have you ever had a newborn in your family? Or have you ever been to a house where there is a newborn? It's a very interesting time. On one hand, there is the happiness of having a new member in the family. But on the other hand, it's a very difficult time, especially for the mother. There are so many troubles associated with motherhood that no one talks about. Today's guest, Jackie Lai, faced many such challenges, and she decided to solve them herself by creating products targeted for mothers through her company called Pariday. Today, we're going to talk about how she got started with her company and what are the challenges one has to face in building a physical product. Jackie, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Hey, Rohit. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. First off, I would like to start with, basically out of my curiosity, how did you come up with the name Pariday? What is it?
So my co-founders and I did a really lengthy brainstorm on names, and Pariday ended up being the winner. So the Latin term Pariday, P-A-R-I-D-A-E, is actually the Latin name for a type of bird called the tit bird. And since we were in the process of solving breastfeeding pain, we thought that would be a funny word to use, so we ended up with Pariday.
But you had something else on your website, actually. What was it?
Something about how the community of birds, it's a really community-driven bird species that like to serve each other. And that is where we are coming from, the three of us, at least at Pariday. We want to serve all the other moms out there. And so that's how we founded the company, Pariday.
Yeah, so it's both. So tell me, Jackie, what was it like for you before you, what was life like for you before you started your company, Pariday? What were you doing before that?
I worked in product design. Actually, I grew up in Singapore and I came here to the U.S. for college. I went to school at Harvey Mudd and got an engineering degree.
So when did you move to the U.S. again, you said?
1995.
What phase of your life you moved here? Were you in high school? Were you in...
Did so you that move was here for college.
For undergrad?
Yeah, for undergrad.
I see. So you didn't move with your family. You moved in here by yourself.
Correct. Yeah, I came on my own, finished my... I'm not sure if you're familiar with the British education system. I finished my A-levels in Singapore, and then I came for college at Harvey Mudd. Did a general engineering degree there, and then I went to Michigan. I have a passion for cars. So I worked in GM in the truck group for a while, but Michigan was way too cold, so... I came back out west here and I did grad school out here. Then I did a structural engineering degree at Stanford for my master's. But after that, I also went back to automotive. I went back and worked at Volkswagen at Electronics Research Lab. Following that, I went back into product design. And that's where I really started really having the passion of designing products, bringing them from concept all the way into manufacturing and finally seeing a product being manufactured.
I see. So what you moved from the Singapore, which is like a different cultural setting than the US, right? So what was it like for the first few years after you moved here?
The first few years actually was not that bad because Harvey Mudd was a really small school. So again, coming back to that sense of community, it was such a small school. You have a very tight-knit group of friends, and I didn't feel that far away from home because also I got to know a lot of friends from the international place. So some of my closest friends were Korean, Thai, and Indonesian. The hardest part really was after graduation when I moved to Michigan. And then I was on my own, and that's when reality hit. I'm like, oh, man, this is different. And that's when, you realize you have to grow up really quickly.
What was different?
Just the, well, the weather itself was a big deal. Coming from Singapore to California was difficult, but not that crazy. But Singapore and California to Michigan was a big leap. And culturally, it was difficult there. I mean, it's more Caucasian over there. And just trying to get Chinese food, I had to drive 45 minutes or cross over to Canada to Windsor to get Chinese food. So that was the hard part.
Yeah, food is usually the first thing that you would miss from your culture, and it was the same way for me as well.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And so before you started Perry Day, what were you doing at that time in your life?
I was working at a product design firm called D2M.
What were you doing there?
My last project there was something called the Zuvo water treatment system. It's a home-based water treatment system that uses ozone and UV and a carbon filter to treat your drinkable water. And my role in that was more of a manufacturing role. So we brought up the line in China, got the product going, and got it shipped. So that was my last project there.
I see. So that is when you took time off for your on your maternity leave, right? And on your ma is that right? I see you nodding your head.
Yes and no. So I did Zuvo for a long time, and then when I got pregnant, I kind of stopped on that for a while.
You
So
did
bef
Zuvo? What is
Zuvo
it?
is the water treatment system.
I see.
So
Okay.
before I left on my maternity leave, I was the manager of manufacturing programs. So maybe this will be a better answer, actually. So before maternity leave, I was the manager of manufacturing programs, and I was in charge of any engineering program that needed manufacturing work done. And at the same time, I was the liaison between D2M Inc. in the US and D2M Asia. So I would be chatting with them every few nights, making sure that the two D2Ms were talking to each other. So most of my Zuvo work was done before the maternity leave ended, sorry, started. But I had started moving off all that work when I was pregnant because I said I can't travel very much. So I needed to do some other more local type work.
Okay, so you took your maternity leave, during which time you met with your colleague Erin. What happened in that meeting?
So at that meeting, I was already, or Ethan, my son, was already born. She was a colleague, and she had left the company before Ethan was born. And a month or two after Ethan was born, we decided to get together just to chat. Her baby was 5 months older, and we just got together for fun. And I was like, I don't know how it came up, but I guess this is what mothers talk about when you're a new mom. We just started talking about how much this breastfeeding thing hurts. And it was crazy. I'm like, oh, it's not just me. And both of us realized the same kind of advice we were both given was put some frozen peas on that pain or use some cabbage leaves, and we're like, that sounds just so stupid. Or more importantly, like, frozen peas hurt more than the pain itself, because first, it's a bag of frozen peas, and second, it's not hands-free. I mean, you're holding a bag of frozen peas against your body with your hands while the baby's over there crying. So after we chatted, we realized there's gotta be, we definitely could be able to do something better. Between Erin and I, she has experience, or both of us have experience doing designing products for medical devices, and she has experience in medical device quality, and I have experience in manufacturing. So between the two of us, it made sense that we should be able to bring something from concept to production. And so we thought we would try.
So you were already working, you were still working at D2M at that time?
Yes and no. I was on my maternity leave planning to go back when I was done.
Okay.
And I went back for about a month or so just to try it out to see if it would fit I guess my new lifestyle, and if I was still excited about the work there. But overall, it was difficult for me to get back, and so I decided to just take that plunge to leave and see where this thing would take us.
Okay, so then what did you do at that point? You decided to leave your job and you had this idea with your colleague Erin. What did you do with that at that time?
We just started prototyping. The moment we started talking about how we thought we could, or the moment we asked ourselves, there's got to be something better out there, we just started brainstorming the same way we used to at work. And we came up, within an hour, we had about 7 or 8 ways to try to do this. And within just a couple of weeks, we already started prototyping, testing out prototyping and mocking up these ideas to see if they were even feasible.
How would you mock up? You had an idea that this kind of product would work, and what would you mean, what did it mean to mock up at that time?
One of my titles is also called the chief hacker. I I just basically looked around the kitchen and the garage for stuff to put together and literally band-aid them together to see if they would make sense. So yeah, with the hacksaw and anything, you just try all sorts of ways.
Yeah, so you were a new mom also at that time, right? And you had a kid or baby at home. And I read in an article about you online that you wanted to take up your entrepreneurial venture while being committed to putting your family first. And putting your family first is not something that you think about as the first thing, right? When you are taking up your own idea. How did that work for you?
It's worked out decent. It's worked out really well. So yeah, when Aaron and I met for the first time, it was about October or November in 2010. In 2011, January, we said, let's do this. We went on a hike and with both babies, and we're like, let's just try this. We'll see what happens. And we did commit. We wrote out our little, I won't call it a business plan, but more of a, here's what our company should look like. And number one was family first. And by that, we meant we were going to give ourselves flexible hours. We were going to do whatever it took to take care of the kids. And then the rest of the time, we're going to be working. And I guess we both work well because, and it's not just Aaron and I would say Mara too. We all know that we trust each other enough that that person's going to be doing whatever it takes to get the job done. So, yeah,
Okay.
that's.
At this time, I have to ask you. So, you started your own company and you're from Singapore, right? And how did your visa status allow you to do it? Which is one of the most asked questions by the listeners, by the way.
Yes, I am lucky. I did not have to worry about visa status. I did get married like a few years obviously prior to this. That's why we had the kid. And so I was already a green card holder at that point. But I do agree, without that, it would have been close to impossible to just quit your job and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the things that always drove me to, figure out my job situation was always the green card H1 status.
After putting all these prototypes together, right? And what did it take to take it from a prototype stage to a real product?
I don't know exactly what it took. It just organically grew. We got to a point where we thought we had something we liked, started to t talking to certain patent lawyers, and we also realized that just the two of us was not going to be enough. So we also realized, hey, we might need a third partner. And that's when we started talking to Mara. Mara Lowry, our
How
and
did you already know Maura?
Erin knew Mara. They were sorority sisters at Stanford, so they knew each other already. And we knew that, or and Erin knew that Mara was free, like as in she was most likely in between jobs. And so we met up one day, showed her our prototypes, and amazingly, she liked them, or she trusted us. And we kind of toyed around with the idea for a while about bringing on a third partner, and she helped us out a little bit, giving us suggestions, and then it just happened. There was just the three of us growing. And in terms of getting the product to a place where we knew we were done, we got to a point where we thought we were close. We were happy with it. We thought it would work. I sourced the film for the product and part of the gel. And the gel making was a little bit of a tricky part. We had our gel pack that we liked. And when we talked to people, the one question that we always would get stuck with was, what's in it? Because everyone liked it.
So actually, I just realized we didn't talk about the product itself. Do you want to give me a quick overview of what the product is and how it works?
So we have what we make is called the tender pillow. And that's the one for breast pain relief. It's a gel pack that's made out of film that's a medical grade film that's used in skin applications. And inside is a kind of gel that's made out of vegetarian food ingredients. So it's safe for mom and baby. If this thing ever pops, it's safe for yourself. You don't have to wash your, or I mean, you don't have to worry about it hurting you or your baby. And then it can be used cold in the fridge or in the freezer, and it doesn't freeze solid. It's still malleable, so it's comfortable for you against your body. And it can also be used warm if you need. So it's like a Swiss Army knife. It can be used in different situations based on what kind of issues you're facing with breastfeeding. And then this gel pillow comes with a little pillowcase, and the pillowcase does a few things. It insulates the skin from the cold, because the pillow gets really cold when it comes out of the freezer. So it insulates the skin from all that cold. And also it absorbs leaks on one side, and it keeps your clothing dry on the other side. So a lot of people during breastfeeding, they have issues with breast milk leaks, and it's embarrassing, it's inconvenient, but this tries to minimize that a little bit.
I see. So how did you know what product, how did you get feedback on the product itself? Like, you had your own feedback, right? You and your co-founders. But apart from that, how did you get feedback from general audience?
So, yeah, we did have our own feedback. Aaron and I were our first two testers, because I faced most of the issues that can be faced with breastfeeding. And so I used a lot of it on myself. And then we contacted my midwifery clinic, and through some other mom Yahoo groups, we found volunteers who would be willing to test these. And that's how, through surveys and stuff, we got some feedback on it.
I see. So you would give away your product and you would get feedback in return later? Is that how it worked?
Something like that. They were more, the ones we gave out early on were not full-fledged product. They were more still prototypes, I guess. But yeah, so we did a lot of need finding in that sense where, well, we knew what the needs were and we knew what we wanted the product to solve, or at least the discomforts we wanted it to alleviate. And we got all those nailed down, and it was just the things like, the final shape for the pillowcase, what should it be like? The final size, what should it be like? Is it too big? Is it too bulky? And all of those questions, that's when we got other users to test them out and let us know.
What was the hardest part for you about building the product at that time? What was difficult about it?
Building the product at that time was the gel. Like I had mentioned earlier, at first we thought we got the product. We thought it worked well. We went and basically looked at ice packs. I mean, everyone makes ice packs, right? We looked at those and we made our prototypes out of those ice, out of portions of those ice packs. And when we came time to talk to patent lawyers, and everyone else would ask us what's in it. And we could never answer the question because it was this blue stuff, right? And we're like, I don't know. And it was really only after we met with Mara a few times later, she's like, well, we know our target audience. We're looking for moms who are educated, who are mid, I don't know, high 20s, low 40s. And these are the ladies who are reading up on everything baby related, and they want the best for their baby. So why don't we just look for something that's more natural, that's easy and safer? And so that's when we scrapped the whole thing and went back into learning more about this gel stuff. What else can we do to make a safer gel? And that's how we came up with our gel. So that was one of the big challenges. A competitor product called the hydrogel pad that many of the big breastfeeding product companies make is a little hydrogel pad that you put against your breast, but you need to wash yourself after you use it. So that's one of the issues that I've always had in my head is what's in it that makes me need to wash myself after I use it before feeding my baby. And so when Mara said, why don't we just make this safer? We're like, oh yeah, that's a no-brainer. So we had to go back and start from scratch. And that was one of the challenges. Neither of us are chemists. Actually, all three of us are not chemists. And but we figured it out.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm very sure you did. So, do you remember when you started selling it and making your first revenue from this product?
Yeah, so it took us till April of 2012. We
That
wanted
was, you started in January of 2011, right? So, it was about 1.5, 1 year and 3 months.
about 1 year. Yeah, in January of 2011 was when we said, or when Erin and I said, let's do this. And I think around June of 2011 was when Mara came on board. And I think September of 2011 was when we formed our LLC. So it took us till April of 2012 for us to finally say, okay, we're comfortable with what we have and let's sell this. So packaging was done, everything was all settled, and yeah, so we sold our first product April 1st, 2012.
Where did you sell it? Who bought it?
A friend actually. She was one of our testers. She was heavily invested in the hydrogel pads. She was using them so much she wanted to buy stock in them. But after I realized she was having pain, I'm like, hey, try this instead. And she fell in love with our product immediately. And then she bought four different sets to send out to all her other friends.
Did you have a platform that you sold in, or were you just selling it direct?
To her, it was direct.
Yeah.
but at that time, I think our website was coming on. And that's when we were really trying to start figuring out how to sell the product.
So what did it feel like for you? Like, you've been working on this product for an year and 3 months, and finally to be able to sell it to real people. What did it mean for you?
It felt really rewarding. I mean, at first it was, oh my God, somebody actually wanted to buy this. But yeah, it was really rewarding. And the three of us, unfortunately, the three of us were not together at that point. It would have been nice, right, if we could hand off the bag to her. But yeah, we took a picture of the check. I'm like, our first check.
How much was it?
Shucks, I don't remember at this point. I think it was $75.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from your friend who was also a tester, do you remember the first stranger who bought your product?
No, I don't.
Okay. No, first stranger is special. When I had the first stranger who commented on my podcast, for example, I was so excited, right? Oh my God, someone who doesn't know me actually has interest in what I have to share through this. So.
Yeah, I believe it. I think we brought our product to well, the first stranger might have actually been a retailer. We brought our product to a retailer called Earth Baby, and they are a diaper service, compostable diaper service. And we brought our product to them, Erin and I. And I remember Earth Baby is started by two guys from IDEO, which is a big time product design firm. And when they said they were okay, they'll buy our product, they'll carry our product as a retailer, I left that meeting. I wasn't sure which one I was more happy about, if the fact that somebody, a retailer, was willing to carry our product, or two guys from IDEO actually liked our product. So I, it just felt really, it felt really awesome.
That was a social proof that someone from a design firm actually loves the way you designed your own product.
Exactly. Like, it was validation that somebody from the design community thought we designed something well. And then after that, we went to also a little baby fair. It's a small baby fair, and we sold. That's also where we sold to another, I guess, a few other pregnant ladies. So those were the first few strangers, and that's where we picked up another retailer, a local Bay Area retailer. So it started getting really exciting, like you say, when people start actually commenting and wanting to know more about your product. It's like, whoa. Yeah.
And how did you scale it from there on?
We just had to scramble. Back in those days, we were making this gel ourselves in the kitchen with little kitchen tools.
What do you mean? You were actually sitting on the kitchen table and making it yourself?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, wow. How is that? Like, can you tell me more about how you would your manufacturing process at that time?
That really was it. It was water and stuff and mix it together and call it done. But we were literally in the kitchen just cooking the stuff up. It doesn't need to be cooked anymore, but yeah.
So were you the who else were all the three founders manufacturing this in their own kitchens?
Yes, we would get together mostly at my place. And our builds in the old days used to be once every quarter. And we have ramped up to once every month. We started manufacturing with, we would fill this, we always had our pouch sealers. We would seal them, and then we would fill these things with little, when I first made my prototypes, I would fill them with icing bags, and then we moved on to syringes and moved on to a little piston filler that used hands, and now we have more automated equipment, pneumatically controlled equipment. But yeah, when we first started, we used to build once a quarter, and we might be able to get 50 to 100 in one build day, and now we're building about 1100 in one build day.
In one
1,100 gel packs in one build day, but we're building every month instead of every quarter.
I see. And who manufactures it now?
We still do. We manufacture it ourselves.
Did you ever try to outsource it?
Yes, we are trying to outsource it. That's one of our the challenges we're facing, and that's one of the things we started doing since last year. The end of last year, we wanted to find people to make our gel packs for us. But we kind of got into a little hurdle, which is trying to find a place to do this for us. It turns out, because our film is so soft by design, we chose this such a soft film so it feels nice against the skin. That has made it very difficult to manufacture on large-scale equipment because it's too flimsy. And so this is one of the things we're trying different companies, and we're trying to find different kinds of equipment to help us.
What do you mean you can't find the manufacturer? So there is no one who is accepting to build your product?
A little bit of both. So there's one place that is going to try it out right now. And they ran into the problem of the film being too thin. And at the same time, I've been looking in other companies where they make little, those little cosmetic samples or food pouches samples, and they also turned the product down. I think mostly because the either the size or the shape or the film is too difficult to work with.
And why did you want to outsource it in the first place? Goodness.
Because we're not into turning in, we're not trying to build a factory right now. Our value add as for the three founders is in creating products and solving problems, and not so, and we don't have the personal resources to build up a factory to run a factory. So, but if push comes to shove, if it does show that our product really is that difficult to make, and we do have the ways to make it, because obviously we do, then that might be a path we end up going down. So,
So,
yeah.
if the need be, you are willing to try starting your own factory, huh? Is it?
Yes.
I
I
see.
mean, in a sense, we already have our own factory. It's just not, it's not running every day. It's running a week or two every month, because that's how long it takes to build all this. The prep work, getting the build day is really only when we start filling the products and sealing them. But yeah, if need be, we are considering going down that path.
And since you sold your first product back in April 2012 to right now, how was your revenue growth like?
It's been steadily increasing. We got lucky last year. We went to a trade show in Vegas and we signed on sales reps. So since last year, we have become a nationwide product. Like, we're carried nationwide in little baby boutiques and hospital stores throughout the nation.
So is it a chain that you signed up with?
No, just sales reps. So,
Okay, so individual sales
yeah, so they
reps,
sell
okay.
to little baby boutiques around the country and like the stores in the hospital and all of those. So, that has brought us nationwide. And we also started selling really well on Amazon. So, prior to summer of last year, we were selling mostly on our own website and we were selling on Amazon but fulfilling it ourselves. But late last year, we turned it to Fulfillment by Amazon, and that has changed a lot. So, in
What has
2020,
that changed when you mean changed a lot? What do you
it
mean
changed
exactly?
the amount of sales on Amazon. So, Amazon's our biggest online seller right now. And so, in 2014, we tripled 2013's revenue, and in 2015, we are on track to triple 2014's revenue.
Wow, that's incredible. 3 times in 1 year
Yeah,
and continuing to
thanks.
grow at the same rate. So, actually, I was doing some little math here based on whatever you mentioned. So, are you around or over $500,000 this year now in
No,
sales? No? Okay.
no,
Do you want to give me an approximate number?
not yet.
Okay, that's fair. And what is wh since you started your company and had all this journey so far? And working from home and building your product and building it in your kitchen and selling to customers. What has that done for you in your personal life?
It's made me very much more resourceful, and it's made me very productive, focused, because I don't have that much. I guess I'm balancing, like you said earlier on, I'm balancing the family and balancing Paraday. Oh, and by the way, in this past, since 2010, when Ethan was born, we also now have a second child, so we actually have two kids. And all three founders now have two kids, so we doubled the number of children we have. So now it's balancing family and Paraday, and it's made me very focused in the sense that I need to know exactly what I need to get done, and when I have time to do it, I'm doing it.
Do you get to spend more time with your kids than you otherwise would have being at D2M in the corporate job?
I think I would. Avani, my daughter, she's 3 now, and she only goes to school for 3 days a week. So I do get to spend Tuesdays and Thursdays with her, and then I get to pick them up from school at just before 3 o'clock. And I get to spend the rest of the time, the rest of my time with them. instead of coming home at 7 o'clock from a corporate job and having to put them to sleep, to bed right away, and only seeing them in the morning and in the afternoons. It's also been fulfilling in the sense that I get to see them play a lot more than most other people will otherwise. I get to take them to their little swimming lessons and all the other lessons that they do, and so it's enjoyable for them and me.
During your entrepreneurial journey, what has been the biggest resource that helped you along the way, Jackie?
I would say the family, with my husband, also named Rohit. He's been a big supporter, either taking the kids when I need to be gone or being a sounding board. His dad, Vish Mishra, is also an entrepreneurial mentor, and so he knows what it's like to not have the regular hours or needing to be gone for this thing and that thing. And all in all, family around me has been the biggest support.
Yeah, I initially connected with Vish in an event, and that's how I met Rohit. And through that, I found you, by the way. Yeah. So, what if someone who is listening wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to do it?
They can reach out to me through the Paraday website. We have a little form that you can fill out, and we all get the emails directly. So anything that's filled out through our website, contact us page will come to me. If not, there's also our Facebook page. It's just Facebook/Paraday, and our Twitter is at Paraday Tenders. That's PARIDAY, capital TEND. HERS.
So, Jackie, if anyone wants to try your product, what is the best way to do it?
Well, they can purchase it from our website on Amazon or check in all the local retailers around the little local baby stores around them. And for your listeners, if anyone who is interested in any of our mom saving products, go to our website and purchase with the coupon code BORDERS, BORDERS, and you can get $5 off any purchase of $25 and above.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for giving that discount. And the website again is www.paridaypariday.com. I will link to all the Twitter and Facebook profiles in the show notes as well. Thank you, Jackie.
Thanks, Rohit.
Thank you for tuning in. That was Jackie Live for You. What a woman. She created a company starting from her own struggles. If you find anything of value today, make sure you reach out to the guest, Jackie, and let her know that you liked her interview. You can reach out to her on Facebook at Pariday, Pariday. All the show notes can be found at breakingtheborders.com/Jackie, Jackie. Thanks again for tuning in and have a good day.